This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Roshan Kanesan, and you're listening to Ring It In Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about the Belanjawan coup, the expenditure guide recently released from the EPF and the Social Wellbeing Research Center, otherwise known as SWRC. There's been a lot of talk since the release of this guide, and today, to help me break that down, I have in the studio with me Noor Hisham Hussain, Head of the Economics and Capital Market Department at the EPF. Welcome to the show, Hisham.
Thanks, Hisham. A pleasure to be here, as always.
Yeah, so, you know, Hisham, this came out last week, and there's been a lot of talk since then. I guess that's great. We want people to be talking about personal finance. But at the same time, I think a lot of questions have come about, especially with when people look at the numbers. Yeah. But before we get there, I just want to ask, what was the goal with the release of this report?
Well, obviously EPF is very concerned about, you know, financial literacy within Malaysia, among Malaysians, and the ability to make sure that you have enough for retirement. And obviously, there's a concern about, you know, the level of incomes in Malaysia. And we are really looking at the whole social protection landscape. And I think the big motivation behind actually doing this was really to provide a benchmark to say, okay, this is the target that people should be really aspiring for. This is the minimum level that you really need to have an adequate standard of living. And what we're actually going to use going forward, what EPF is actually going to do with this is actually to apply it to our basic savings level. So this is the kind of savings that you need at retirement to sustain a reasonable standard of living during your retirement, because the current basic savings requirement is basically is based on, if I'm not mistaken, is based on the minimum level of pension that the government gives.
Right.
But that's very close to the poverty line. And it's quite discouraging to see that so many of our members don't even meet that level. And so, there is a big concern about the adequacy of savings for retirement.
Yeah, I would guess that this would help us build our goals, right?
Yep.
If we have a level of the minimum, as we've worked, as we're emphasizing here, the minimum amount I need, and then we add a certain maybe inflation rate to by the time we retire, at least it gives us a savings goal.
Yes,
so that's a big problem most of the time. It's
absolutely,
what are the goals? How do we save? How much should we save?
Yep.
So at least that really helps.
And I think the Belanjawan coup actually functions on many levels. It's not just for us at EPF in terms of retirement adequacy. But, you know, the government can actually take it and look at, okay, what is the level of social protection that should be provided to people? What is the level of assistance that should be provided to people? Because all this while, I mean, from the 1970s onwards, we have been focused on poverty. But there is a section of society that's above the poverty line but are still economically vulnerable. They don't have the ability to really participate in society because they just don't have the income for it. And I think that also there's a concern about, obviously, going forward, what that does to us as a society. And I think the government also recognizes this, but it's not quite granular enough. I mean, there's this, all this talk about the B40, right? But the B40 is such a heterogeneous group.
Yeah.
So you really need to provide some focus and some form of benchmark for actually the government to move on. And obviously, Belanjawan coup helps, I think, the financial planning industry to say to people, okay, this is where you should be, and whatever you got above that, you know, this is what you should be doing in terms of, you know, saving and expenditure and all that.
Yeah. So that benchmarking right there, I think that's a very important part of this, because when it comes to cost of living, there are a lot of variabilities when it comes to ascertaining what it costs to live.
Yep.
You know, a lot of times we hear, especially because of the deflation number from last month,
yes,
we're hearing a lot about, oh, why aren't things cheaper? But
yes,
it's a 1 month deflation mostly based out of fuel costs. That's not reflective of the cost of living in general.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with how the growth numbers are actually interpreted. And I think that's something that I think the economists and statisticians like myself really need to educate the public on.
Yeah, because there is a difference between the macro levels and what people feel on the ground.
Absolutely, yes.
And And just because the GDP is growing or something doesn't mean that things on the ground reflect that situation.
Yeah, because it's a totality for the whole country, you know. And if you look at it in aggregate, it might look good, but if you look underneath it, you know, some industries are doing better, some are doing worse. I think one example I can give is that wage growth, I think, over last year has been really good. But if you look at the breakdown of the numbers, certain segments of the population aren't benefiting. I think Bandagara had this survey, I think, last year where they were pointing out that I think roughly about two-thirds of the workforce were getting very good increments, right? But one-third got almost nothing at all. So even though the overall numbers look good, you know, some people on the ground will not feel it.
Yeah, because that number right there, that means one in three people didn't see any wage increment last year.
Exactly, yeah.
And that is a big number, and that could be focused in certain areas. It could be spread out.
Yeah.
So, when we see these numbers overall, we have to keep in mind that these are averages. These are
correct,
because you can't be giving personalized data to everybody.
Exactly.
Right?
I think that applies both to Belanjawanku as well as the CPI. You take it as a starting point, I think, and your personal experience of. And your personal preferences of what you think you need and what you don't need are going to be very, very different from the average. Somebody who has diabetes is going to need that insulin shot. So that's a need for them. And their budget is going to be very different from mine or from anybody else. Somebody whose job requires them to travel a lot is going to have very different needs from somebody who's in the office 9 to 5.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a starting point. And it should be taken as the bare minimum you need. And if you have needs above that, then you can just add on to that budget and then you can see what your personal Belanjawanku is.
Yeah, so coming back to the Belanjawanku, the report. Yeah. Now, I want to see whether we can get into the survey method and the data collection here because, I mean, there have been a lot of questions, a lot of criticism about, in one thing in particular, it was, I think, for the singles, the rental rate of 300 ringgit. I think a lot of people are asking, who do you know lives on 300 ringgit a month? If you know anyone who does, please tweet at us at BFM Radio. So could you help us contextualize the data here? These were actual survey numbers, right?
Correct. There was actually from, if I'm not mistaken, it was taken from iBillet, as well as, there was one more site, but it slips my mind. But these are actual rental rooms. Also, I think people have to understand, this is the bare minimum. This is the cheapest we could get. It is possible to get it at that price, but you have to. There's a trade-off, obviously. The cheaper it is, obviously, the further it is, which is one of the assumptions under the Belanjawanku is actually a 30-kilometer travel
radius.
Distance. Yes.
Yeah.
We're talking like places like Gombak. We're talking like places like Ulangat and all the. You know, there are places within Greater KL where you can get these prices. They're not necessarily the average price, right? But again, this is a bare minimum budget.
Right, because there are assumptions that have been taken into this study. One of them you just mentioned is the 30 km radius from your home.
Yeah.
But there are also things like public education, public health care.
Exactly.
And
you're not sick.
Yeah, you're not sick. So we're looking at the... it's bare minimum. It's also maybe slightly idealistic, but that's the average we're looking at here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But there are also things like we're making informed decisions, which we hope we really do. And I hope that Ringgit and Sense helps out with there.
Yes. Correct.
So there are assumptions here and these set the basis for the study.
That's right.
You can't do a study without having assumptions.
Correct. So, I mean... I think in terms of, you know, personal experience, in terms of your I think personal circumstances, your reference budget will be different quite different from this one. But it'll at least give you some idea of where you should benchmark yourself.
Where do we go from here, though? It's what does EPF want to see going forward?
Okay, what the plan is, one is we're going to do this every year, or at least every couple of years. Second thing is that we want to extend this to more than one city in Malaysia. We're going to try JB, we're going to try Penang, we're going to try different areas. And I think that will provide a lot more information, both to people on the ground as well as the government in terms of what the actual situation actually is. Because we do know that, you know, I think one issue that a lot of people have with the CPI is that you have this one number, but you have very different inflation rates across different states, between urban and rural, between different income levels. Your experience of inflation is very different from what the official number is. So what we want to do going forward with this is to actually show those differences. And this will also help, because this is also going to be a reference guide for our own retirement advisory services, RES.
Okay.
So we're going to be actually using this when we advise people on retirement, what to do with their money. Okay, this is the kind of budget that you actually need. So that's one reason why we have elderly citizens as part of Belanjawanku, because we really need to know, okay, how much do we actually need to survive?
Right, so this looks like it could be the next index, a Belanjawanku index per se.
It could be. It's heading there, yes.
We'll see how it goes over the next few years. Yeah. But another criticism was the people bringing up the living wage that Bank Negara had, right? They were saying, oh, that's 2,600, that's a living wage, but how are people supposed to live on this 1,006 that EPF has put in.
I think it basically boils down to is we're looking at it from an expenditure point of view. Bank Negara was looking at it from an income perspective. But if you try to reconcile the two, it's actually quite close. If you look at the single household with savings, our number is 2,490 ringgit.
Yeah, that's with the car, right?
With the car.
Yeah.
Right? You add on top of that EPF contributions and you get about 2,007.
So roughly around the same?
Roughly around the same ballpark, yeah.
Coming up next, we're going to talk about the cost of living, the different factors that are involved, and take a look at wage stagnation in Malaysia. This is Ringgit & Sense. Stay tuned. Thanks for staying with us here on Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Still in the studio with me is Noor Hisham Hussain, the head of the Economics and Capital Market Department at the EPF. Hisham and I have been talking about the Belanjawanku Expenditure Guide and the different elements and some of the criticisms that have been coming through. Yeah. But the basis here that we've been talking about is that this is a bare minimum guide, what you could possibly live on in the Klang Valley on average. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the cost of living, there are many dynamics here. There are, whether it's the CPI, it's been an ongoing topic. Hisham, what are your thoughts when it comes to thinking about the cost of living?
I think the discrepancy, there's a couple of discrepancies here that a lot of people don't take into account. I think within the CPI itself, most people point to food as indicating that the inflation is a lot higher than what the CPI is showing. But if you actually break down the CPI and you look at the food index, you'll see that the food index is running at roughly twice the pace of the overall index. Food is getting more expensive, and the CPI actually takes that into account. So it's not necessarily inaccurate, I think, one thing. But the basic problem, I think, is that people treat the CPI as a cost of living index, and it isn't. It's a cost of consuming indexed. So it only takes into account consumption items.
Right.
And I think that's one advantage that Belanjawanku has is that it takes the whole budget into account, both consumption as well as assets. And I think the key difference essentially between the CPI and a cost of living index is that a cost of living index would include house prices, which is the number one item on everybody's budget. It's the single biggest expenditure item. And of course, if you look at house prices over the last decade, I mean, it has outrun the CPI considerably. So we've seen, I think, a very large expansion in terms of, on top of that, I think one thing that the data also shows is that home ownership is rising, especially among the young.
Okay.
You do have this issue where food prices are rising, and that's putting pressure on budgets. But what's really put pressure on budgets is that a lot of people have taken on this huge commitment to housing that has been rising over time, and that has squeezed other parts of their budget. And an increasing part of what they're actually spending on is going towards housing. The other thing, I think, is obviously, and this is something is very clear in Belanjawanku, is the cost of transportation and the cost of childcare. And both those items are very, very large, especially for families. Both transportation and childcare are bigger than the food budget. And anything that impacts the price of petrol, the price of getting childcare services is going to hit a lot of families' budgets directly. And that's also a big issue. And I think one thing that probably should be recognized as well, as the economy develops into a high-income nation, services inflation will outrun goods inflation. And what that means is that the prices of things where it involves a lot of labor like childcare, like education, are likely to rise faster than the prices of goods. And again, because families tend to require more in terms of services rather than single households or even the elderly, they're going to get hit as well.
So the sensitivity there is very...
Yeah, it's much higher. Yeah. Yes.
Childcare,
transportation,
food.
And food and housing.
And housing, yeah. So housing is the biggest one. Mortgages are a big chunk, whether it's your cash flow or
And the CPI doesn't take into account house prices.
So the CPI, not necessarily the best gauge for cost of living, as you said just now. It's more of the consumption side of things. But so I guess the question here, right, is with all these things, with this rate of inflation on these varying things, going up at such a pace, what is the long-term solution here?
Well, I'll echo what my boss said. We have to fix incomes. The rate of income growth has got to keep pace because, you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, the petrol is one thing because it's a commodity item. But for a lot of other items in terms of services or whatever, if you try to reduce their prices, you're actually hitting somebody else's income.
Yeah.
So that doesn't necessarily improve the whole economy. It doesn't necessarily improve the welfare of everybody. So what we have to somehow figure out is to increase the rate of basically wage growth. Now, if you look at our own data at EPF, wage growth over the past 5 years has been very volatile. We had a good year last year, I think, for a lot of people. Wage growth was fairly strong. But the 2 years before that, for some segments, it was negative. Unfortunately, the poorest performing sector is the young.
Okay.
So people below the age of 35, their wage growth has been poorer than the people above that age. So that's, again, something we don't exactly know why. It's something that really does need to be investigated. And we do need some direction in terms of where the economy is going. And I think that will help a great deal in terms of the investment climate as well as, you know, giving employers the confidence to actually pay their employees better.
Yeah, so everything really revolves around incomes because when we try to cut costs, like you mentioned just now, it is you are taking income away from someone else, right? Now, there is that... When you cut costs, you are essentially reducing the pool of money. Mm-hmm. But if you, let's say you parallel something like Australia, where services are, the labor cost there is higher than, much higher than what we get in Malaysia. But things are more expensive. But there is a choice of consumption there.
Yes.
You have more money. Yes, things are more expensive, but you have that option to choose a particular set of goods as opposed to being constrained to having to take particular goods.
Yes, correct. And I think that's common with a lot of other high-income economies. I mean, it's not just Australia. You could talk about Singapore. You could talk about the UK. You could talk about Europe. The because services are more expensive, they have a lot more choice in terms of the type of goods that they can buy. Absolutely.
So it really comes to not a cultural thing, but it really comes to a much bigger issue of paying people more.
Yeah, and it's an economic structure problem. It's a culture problem. And I think I suppose we need to come to some kind of social consensus on this.
Yeah, it really does. It's not an overnight solution. It's not something that we can fix right now. But this conversation we're having right now of how much it costs to live, breaking down wages, looking at this in a broader scope is, I think, the direction we need.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to go anywhere if you don't start talking about it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
If you don't start measuring things, you're not going to be able to manage it because then what are you managing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the real value of Belanja Wangku is that it gives us a starting point. It's prompted the kind of debate that we really wanted to see, both from UM's point of view as well as EPF's point of view. And it's very encouraging, even with all the criticism. I mean, you can say it's wrong, but, you know, there are multiple ways of coming up with budgets like this. It's a good starting point. It's something that you can actually point to and say, okay, this is what we showed. This is what Bandagara showed. Okay, but there's really not that big of a difference between our estimation. And we have to start somewhere.
Yeah. All right. And if you have anything to say about this, if you think I should have asked anything in particular, any queries, any criticism, any praise for this Belanja Wangku, let us know on Twitter at BFM Radio because we really want to know what you think. End of the day, this is a guide for everybody out there and we want to hear all your voices. If we have enough questions, who knows, maybe Hisham will come in for a second, for a part two on Belanjawan Ku.
I'll be more than happy to.
And on that note, thank you so much for coming in, Hisham, this time around.
You're welcome.
Today on the show, I had Nur Hisham Hussain, the head of the Economics and Capital Market Department at the EPF. We were talking about the Belanjawan Ku Expenditure Guide. This was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Up next is the 10am News Bulletin and then Enterprise. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.